Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Footbear Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Dr. Stu, what's up, buddy?
Hey, James, what's going on? I am doing quite well. It is Thursday, not Wednesday, but we had some things going on yesterday. We're recording today. It's going to be a good time. Had a good day at work. It was much better than yesterday. So to keep my license, I have to keep going to school. You have a set number of hours every two-year period, and yesterday was my first foray into this new two-year period. It was awful. I was just so bored all day. And, you know, you're not in clinic, so you're not making money. And you sit there, and you listen, and you try to learn, and it's quite something. But at least I got lunch, so that's kind of nice. But happy to be here. Going to be talking about some fun and exciting teams, James. But first, I want to know how you are doing tonight.
I am doing fantastic. Sorry to hear you had to go through some professional development classes. That's always stupid.
Sorry,
but
you had to learn.
You know, it's not like knowledge is power. But I am doing fantastic. I basically literally just got home from seeing The Odyssey. Fantastic movie. Everybody should see it. Nolan is the greatest director of all time, and I will not hear otherwise. Stu, is the sky on fire where you are?
No, but I have heard a lot from people up north that they it's just smoke because Canada's aflame right now.
Yeah, I walked outside this morning with Indy, and I was like, well, there's a weird haze, and the sky kind of smells, or air kind of smells like a campfire, and it isn't great. And then, like, 2 hours later, I walked Indy, and I was like, my throat's kind of scratchy. And then I just walked out of the movie, and the haze got so much worse, and it's like a brown fog. It's really gross. But we're talking about football today. And that kind of makes it better. And the teams we're talking about today are the first two teams from the AFC West for us. We're going to hit the Kansas City Chiefs, including the newly minted Mr. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, and the Denver Broncos. I'm sure there are some other married folks there as well. But, Stu, before we do that, what are you drinking tonight?
Yes, as requested by loyal listener Ethan, if you want to have us drink beers that you like too, we take beer requests at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. But Ethan wrote in and asked us to sample from Sun King Brewery the Orange Vanilla Cream Ale. It's a variant on their cream ale, just like the Sunlight, which is one of my all-time favorite beers. And it was actually really funny, James. So I read that email. It was some weeks ago. We've been talking about his questions over the last couple episodes, and I had some beers already planned out for the next week, so had to do it today. But that night, I swear, that night, I went to a campfire with my brother-in-law, and he just throws one in my hand. I didn't say anything about it. He just throws an Orange Vanilla Cream Ale from Sun King Brewery in my hand, and I was like, huh. If only I was talking about the Broncos and Chiefs right now. But It is 5.3% ABV, 20 IBUs. It's very good. It's very good. I like the Sunlight better, but it's up there in, you know, all-time favorite beers. Top 20, top 25. I don't know. I don't know how much beer I've drank across my lifetime. It's probably more than I'd like to admit. But, James, I want to know what you are drinking tonight.
Tonight, I'm drinking one that I have been waiting for. So I have consumed significantly less Sturdy Shelter beer this season than I did last season, mostly because I don't want to appear as a homer, and also because I was waiting for this specific beer to be canned and to be able to put it on the show, because I knew that the second that I tried it on the show, it would most likely, if not make the top five for the summer, then probably be close to number one. But I am drinking from Sturdy Shelter Brewing in Batavia, Illinois, the Dancing House Dark Czech Lager. It is a 5.6 ABV dark Czech lager. If you are someone out there who doesn't like dark beers, this is a beer that I think you would like. If you are someone who does like dark beer, I think this is a beer that you would like. This is a beer that kind of has something for everything. It has kind of the lightness and mouthfeel of a lighter beer, like a lager, because it is a lager. But it's also got kind of like the chocolate and coffee and dark fruit flavors of your darker beers. So I think it's one of my favorite beers I've had. And let's crack these bad boys in 3, 2, 1. It is simply delightful. And it goes well, I guess, with Canadian wildfires.
Yes. It's dark, just like the sky.
Yeah. All right, Stu. I don't know if there's any NFL news we need to talk about. I know that I was very surprised this week to see Daniel Jones is cleared to play. Or at least cleared to go through off-season camps. That isn't really in our scope of the episode today, but I thought it would be worth bringing up because it, I don't know if it answers questions for the Colts or brings up more questions, but either way, I thought that was a surprising thing to read. Any thoughts on that?
No, it is a surprising thing. Honestly, that was a really quick turnaround for an Achilles tear. I'm just wandering around waiting for Tyrese Halliburton to come back from the same thing and lead us to the promised land. But there was one piece of news that I thought was at least relevant to us. It was that Alvin Kamara with the Saints, they agreed to a restructured contract. He will be back with the Saints this year, likely spelling Travis Etienne Jr. and being in a much reduced role than I think we're usually familiar with AK having with the Saints. So not anything too crazy. Again, I'm not super high on AK in fantasy, but it is important to know that he is officially going to be back. And you know, there's merit to his role. It's just probably not overly fantasy relevant.
Do you think that Alvin Kamara is a Hall of Famer?
I am very poor about identifying Hall of Famers or not. So I'm going to say I don't know. Probably not.
I've been trying to think about that more, like what players that are currently in the NFL are going to be Hall of Famers. Like there's some really phenomenal players who probably won't get in. And I'm not sure where I stand on Alvin Kamara. Like he had some crazy productive years, but I don't know if he had that kind of career or is having that kind of career to make it in. Like you've got a few that are most likely obviously going to get in, like Patrick Mahomes is going to get in, Christian McCaffrey is going to get in, Mike Evans is going to get in. All those guys are probably, if not first ballot, then like
Aaron Rodgers
a year or two. Aaron Rodgers first ballot, Matt Stafford first ballot.
I was thinking of Devontae Adams. That's why I thought Aaron Rodgers. I don't know about Devontae. I feel like kinda, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Devontae Adams is going to be first ballot, but he's going to get it.
Yeah, probably not first. I don't even know if Mike Evans will be first.
Mike Evans will absolutely be
first. A lot of question about him being first, but okay, I mean, all right.
I think he's
not going to be a bet because I don't know enough about that.
Well, I don't know if Hall of Fame nominations fit into the scope of our bets, but
definitely not.
We do need to start thinking about more of those. I haven't been keeping track of which ones we've said we're doing.
Well, Baker Mayfield is going to be a QB1. So you're saying he's going to be less than quarterback 12.5.
Yep.
The other, oh gosh, what was is the Mekhi Lemon and Omar Cooper Jr. Is that part of the group of five or is that a whole separate thing?
That was part of the group of five, and I agreed to that one before they had been drafted, and I'm not going to concede it because I made the agreement, and I'm not one to renege on my bets, but yeah, that one looks silly.
You want to give yourself a secondary win condition?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was going to say, like, Carnell Tate, if he scores more than 9 touchdowns, then you win that bet.
It's like a conditional. No, I made my bet. I'll sleep in it. And I don't feel good about it. It's kind of a scratchy bed. It's not super comfortable. I thought you said I made that bet
and I'll lay in it. And I was like, that is kind of clever wordplay. I kind of like that, but I just misheard you. So I thought you were smarter than you are, I guess.
For everyone listening, I said the clever thing. So let's go ahead and get started with the Chiefs here. We're already a little bit delayed because I wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame and stuff. But where do we want to start with this? I guess the place you got to start is the leader of the team, Patrick Mahomes, went down with an injury late last season. But before his injury, he was leading fantasy football as the QB1. I think maybe the week before he went down, he might have dropped to the QB2 or 3 or something. But he was as elite as Patrick Mahomes gets for fantasy football last year. The rest of his team notwithstanding, the Chiefs obviously had quite a bit of a downturn in production. Various reasons from that. The dynasty roster that they had has been slowly deteriorating over the years, in many cases because of the bloated contracts that they had to give to their stars like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And it's just harder to keep guys around and guys get older and things like that. But we are starting to see a bit of retooling for the Chiefs moving into the future. And we'll see how that goes. But Patrick Mahomes currently going as the QB13. But he just, as a player in fantasy football this year, has some wild differences in how people are predicting him. I've seen him go in the 7th round in mock drafts. I've seen him go in the 13th round in mock drafts. I've seen him drafted as a clear QB1. I've seen him drafted as a backup multiple times. So I think the way that I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes, Stu, is that he is probably, he might be the most undervalued player in fantasy football right now.
Mm-hmm. One of.
I don't know if I want to say one of or the. I think I'm probably going to say the, just because he is probably going to come back and produce immediately. We don't know for sure yet if he is or isn't going to be ready to go for the start of the season, but I think that we, I've said this in previous episodes, I think that we get too hung up on guys not being ready to go for the start of the season. And we tend to write guys off who are clearly high producers. We did it with Matt Stafford last year, but we also did that with Joe Mixon last year, and we were absolutely correct. So every once
You're
in
not
a while.
Wrong.
Yeah. But it just kind of seemed, and we've done it with like Rashee Rice too. So I think that for a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you can't sleep on him. If you want him and he is available for you at a price that you like and for what Patrick Mahomes is going to produce this year, you're going to get him at a good price. He just seems too good to pass up. If you can get him in the 7th, even that's not too much of a reach, I think, for him. So, Stu, I talked a lot. What do you think about Patty Mahomes?
Oh, I mean, he's incredibly undervalued. It's so undervalued that I don't think that he stays there. I mean, we still have to watch ADP as training camp gets, you know, fully underway, as preseason starts, as he proves, hopefully, that he comes out and shows us that the knee is healed. He's going to be there for the start of the season. I think you're going to see his ADP skyrocket because, like you said, incredibly undervalued. He's one of my favorite pieces to go grab in mock drafts right now just because it's so bloody obvious. The best thing about him is that, I mean, last year he was producing incredibly well. He's had some down years, but last year was not one of them prior to injury, and he was doing so with question marks at his skill position players. Xavier Worthy, we thought he was going to be incredible, dislocates his shoulder on the third snap of their season. He's never really the same the entire way going forward. Rashee Rice with off-the-field issues. and knee issues as well, may or may not have been caused by Patrick Mahomes in his lifetime. That was a big question mark. You know, aging Travis Kelce, that's not exactly what it once was, but he was still producing at an extremely high level. He's going to do that again, hopefully with these skill position players, outside of Kelce being 1 year older, are hopefully going to be on the field and producing, and he's going to have the addition of Kenbone Walker from Seattle, coming over from Seattle. So, Patrick Mahomes, slam that draft button. Seventh, I would take him in the seventh every day of the week. I'd probably take him higher, too.
I feel like no matter where you're planning to take him, there is a good chance that someone snipes him. So it's probably going to end up being, if you know that like his ceiling is the seventh round, you just plan to go there and pray that someone doesn't get super brave and take him in the sixth.
Yeah, which, just don't get greedy. You're going to look at him and be like, I bet he falls one more round. Nope.
Let's not get crazy. I've been having a lot of drafts recently where Josh Allen has fallen to me in like the fourth, and I've been like, if that happens, like I kind of have to, right? But I digress. We're on the Chiefs. Where should we go next? So you mentioned Kenbone Walker. Let's go ahead and hit the running backs then. The new introduction to the running back stable this year is Kenneth Walker. Gone is Isaiah Pacheco. And Kenneth Walker, fresh off of his Super Bowl MVP run, is, I would say, the clear-cut RB1 here.
Very clear.
Doesn't seem to be a ton of competition here. Not that he'll never get spelled, because he definitely will, but this kind of seems like a much better situation for him to be able to showcase his talents than what he was able to do throughout most of his past few seasons with Seattle. He was kind of stuck with Zach Charbonnet splitting the bill, never really being able to take over as the clear-cut bell cow until Charbonnet got hurt. And then he was able to really showcase his talents. Here, he's going to have a chance to do it. He's going to have a chance to do it in a significantly different offense. A lot more zone running here than I think you saw in Seattle over the last few seasons, which I think he'll be fine with, as well as being able to do stuff through the air. I'm currently seeing Kenneth Walker as the RB11, and I'm seeing him going in the second round. The only thing that gives me pause with Kenneth Walker is how we've seen Kansas City running backs perform over the last few seasons. Not that I think Isaiah Pacheco or Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Kareem Hunt are necessarily up to his level, but it does give me a little bit of pause, as does seeing him kind of get lost in the mix with Zach Charbonnet over various points of the last few seasons. I think he's going to be an RB1. If he's not, he's going to be pretty close. The second round is not a reach. It just depends on who else is around for him there, because I don't see Emmett Johnson taking many meaningful reps from him. Don't see Breshad Smith doing it, Amari DiMercato, or whoever else is there. It kind of seems like his thing. So, Stu, what are your thoughts on Kenneth Walker and or the running backs?
Yeah, I think when he is given the opportunity to take the main, you know, chunk, the main share of a running back stable, he's only ever produced. And he got that opportunity there through the playoffs with the Seattle Seahawks. He was very, you know, nicely named the Super Bowl MVP, very well deserved. He showed out in that postseason and they won it all. Now he gets to go to Kansas City, where, as you say, there's really not a whole lot behind him. Emmett Johnson is, from the 2026 draft, a fifth-round draft pick. He's gotten some noise that at least I've been, you know, reading about. But besides that, Breshad Smith and Amari DiMercato coming over from the Cardinals, there's no threat here that's going to take away from Kenbone Walker. If he is healthy, he is going to get the lion's share of the work for a team that should be quite good, a team that boasts a solid defense, and that's just a good fantasy recipe for a running back. And that's why in the second round we're not talking about him as a reach. If you had him as your running back one, I have no problem with that. If you go Puka Nacua and then somehow get Kenbone in the second round, great. The guys that are going around him, there's not even a whole lot that I would take over him. And I'm honestly not taking him too many times. Like, maybe Chase Brown, Omarion Hampton, sure. Devon Achane, I could go either way, but there's not a whole lot that I would move him from his current RB11 price, at least in standard scoring. I should say that. So really excited for him in the new uniform. He should show out for fantasy. Injuries aside, he's a good get. You should go get him.
Yeah.
The more sketchy things to talk about are the wide receivers, James. I know you're a big Rashee Rice fan.
Huge Rashee Rice fan.
I am not a huge Rashee Rice fan, personally, but I am kind of a big Xavier Worthy fan, I guess. You want to talk about Rice first?
I do. I'll kind of hit the big three here to give you something to compare to. Rashee Rice is currently going as the wide receiver 12. I think that's where he should be going, seeing him go in the third round, because we're most likely going to be seeing a fair amount more running backs going early than receivers this year. But Rashee Rice, when he's been healthy, has been one of the most dynamic wide receivers in both commanding touches as well as making things happen with the ball when he has it. He reminds me a lot of a young Devontae Adams, and I see his role being similar to a young Devontae Adams as well. That being said, staying on the field has been an issue, both due to off-the-field issues and injuries, as Stu mentioned earlier. So that is definitely something that's going to give people pause, as well as there were points during last year when, if the Chiefs' offense was struggling, he would occasionally struggle as well. But that was occasional. He's incredibly talented. If his head is there and not in jail, then he is a very good player who should be targeted highly. In the third round, I think that's a steal. I've seen him gone in the second as well, and I would love to have anything he's selling. Xavier Worthy, I'm very curious to hear why you are high on Xavier Worthy. I had Xavier Worthy for a lot of last year, and I was very unimpressed with many things about his game. He's going as the wide receiver 51. I am avoiding him. A guy I'm not necessarily avoiding is the wide receiver 52, rookie out of Texas A&M, Casey Concepcion, who is in the depth chart slotting in right behind Worthy. I think as a prospect, KC, I believe, is a smaller one, but very fast. A guy who...
James, that I love KC Concepcion. He got drafted by the Browns, didn't he?
He is on my thing because I did my control F KC.
For Kansas City.
Yeah. I've done that before. That's my bad, guys.
It's all right. I mean, KC Concepcion is a good get later on in drafts. No problem at all. But
if Patrick Mahomes was throwing to him,
he would just be Xavier Worthy, but worse.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's all the things I needed to say on that. Watch my credibility fly out the window.
Okay. Stu, you were just excited. See, I was also disappointed when he was not drafted to Kansas City because, I mean, it was just obvious. KC Concepcion going to Kansas City. The wide receiver 3, I think, would be Tyquan Thornton, who periodically showed out last year, but not super frequently.
Not going to be drafted.
He's good for a deep ball, not Worthy. So talking about them, I agree with everything you said about Rashee Rice. He is where he should be in fantasy drafts right now. I think he is going to play well if he's on the field, and I do not think his off-the-field issues are going to keep him from the field this year, personally speaking. It's just... I don't even think I have a basis for this based in stats. It's just vibes, I guess, which is most of my analysis sometimes. When I have him as my wide receiver 1, it just does not feel good. I'm looking at the players going around him. This is standard wide receiver ADP right now. He's going around the likes of Chris Olave, George Pickens, T. Higgins, and Ted Oromcamillan, followed by Devonta Smith. Any of those guys being my wide receiver one, I would feel really, really bad about. So I'm I guess my strategy this year is to kind of skip that tier, have somebody a little bit higher, the Nico Collins, Drake London's, AJ Brown's, and then pair them with someone like, I don't know, we'll talk about him later, but Jalen Waddle, Devontae Adams, Emeka Ekwuka, I'm really high on because Baker Mayfield's the truth, things like that. It's just a vibe thing. I don't like trusting Rashee Rice because I don't think he has produced like a number one so far. And there's been a myriad of reasons why, but I mean, he hasn't played a full slate of games in 3 years now. Not always for his fault, but I'm a little sketched out. And you're paying a high price for it. Xavier Worthy, however, I am getting a lot of shares of because he's basically free. And I think he was incredibly hampered last year with that shoulder dislocation. I think that affected him from the get-go. And what he was in 2025 is not the player that we should see going forward. He is 23 years old, incredibly young, very fast. The biggest downside is that he's just small, but a healthy Patrick Mahomes, healthy and on the field Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce still taking some of the intermediate stuff, freeing up Xavier Worthy over the top. We now have Kenbone Walker as a threat in the backfield, opening up play action, speedy Xavier Worthy down the field. I think this year opens up Xavier Worthy as a fantasy asset, and I think getting on this train early is going to be very beneficial to people for the price that he's currently going at. You said he was what, wide receiver 51? Wide receiver 51, you could just drop that week one or two if his role is not what we think. But if you're going at him in these very late rounds, what is it right now that he's going? Round like 9 or 10? Dart throws. You're getting into dart throws at that point. You're taking, you know, a little bit of a leap on a player that you believe in. And I think for the reasons that I've listed, I do believe in Xavier Worthy. I think he has the opportunity to mold his game and take the next step forward. And we're all a little bit blinded by the 2025 year where he was, I think, significantly impacted the entire time. That's my
shtick on Xavier Worthy. I've been letting you talk me into your takes this season.
Oh my God.
You might be talking me into Xavier.
Bro.
I don't know.
You're not supposed to get into him. I'm supposed to draft him.
Last guy on the Chiefs we got to talk about is Travis Kelce. And this episode is going to be a long one. We're 28 minutes in and we haven't even hit
these are the exciting teams
yet.
We talk more about the exciting teams. We're going to talk about the Raiders next week. Miss me with that.
Yeah. But there is a conversation that needs to be had about Travis Kelce because there is a lot that, well, he's 14 seasons in, he's 36, he's the newly minted Mr. Taylor Swift. But last season, despite having kind of a continued downward trajectory of his production, with only 11.4 points per game, he still was the tight end 3 on the season. Behind only Trey McBride and Kyle Pitts, at least in PPR pointage. But that said, a lot of his production, there really wasn't any specific place where his production came from that was abnormal. He was getting a fair amount of targets, brought a lot of them in. He never did have a 100-yard game over the course of the season, but that's not super irregular for tight ends, even high-producing ones. And he brought in 5 touchdowns over the course of the season. Where he's going right now, I'm seeing him as the tight end 9. He's another guy who I've seen fluctuate a lot, but I'm usually seeing him last until the later rounds. In the mock draft I did today to prepare for this, I saw him going in the 12th round, which seems like a pretty good price to pay for a guy like Travis Kelce, who can produce at a tight end 1 level. But as we've said before, what does the tight end 1 level really mean? It doesn't mean as much as it would be for like a wide receiver 1 or a running back one. When we're looking at tight end ones, we really want to be, rather than seeing like top 12, we really kind of want to see top four, top five. That's more in line with what an elite tight end is. And yes, technically last year that was Travis Kelce, but you look at his game log, when was he really able to do it? He had a stretch during the middle of the season where he had 21, 12, 24, and then towards the end of the season, he was getting ones and eights and fours. He was producing, but it was a little bit here and there. Again, this is tight end, so it's not really that big of a deal. If he's giving you stat lines like that, that's you'll take that every day of the week, especially if you're only taking him in the 12th round. So I guess the big thing is the age and where his role is on the Chiefs. I think he had a better season, if not statistically, than in the way his statistics were perceived last year. But even though it felt like he played better than he did the year before, he still technically was about the same. So, Stu, I feel like I'm kind of talking in circles. I'm basically saying smash him in the 12th round. That's perfect. Great. Take him. But there's some confusion about how I feel about this man. So, Stu, what are your thoughts on
I think he's Mr. Swift? For this price, he's a fine selection. Again, when you get down that deep into tight ends, you're filling a space in your starting lineup. You're not getting a player that's moving the needle for your fantasy team. You're hoping for a nice floor. And a 14-year veteran with playing with the same quarterback that he's played with for some 8 years now, he's been outstanding for most of his career. Now he's just reasonably reliable. You could do far worse than Travis Kelce in the 12th round as the tight end 9. I have no problems with it. I do think he takes a regressive step backwards, because I think the Chiefs will have to rely on him less, given probably better health from the wide receivers Rice and Worthy, as well as the addition of Walker. So I think he does take a step back overall. I don't expect a tight end 3, but a tight end 5, a tight end 6, very well within parameters for Travis Kelce in the 2026 season. If you want something like that, that's totally fine. I have no problems with it. I think he wants to go out on a high note, and last year was definitely not a high note. So if you can get his swan song, you could do far, far worse. And we're going to talk about a tight end that I consider worse in Evan Engram a little bit later. But James, I'm actually really excited to talk about the Denver Broncos. This is an ascending team, a young team. There's a lot of intrigue. There's a lot of young players that we get to talk about, and some new additions as well, just like the Chiefs had. I just want to go out and start with this. I think the Denver Broncos are probably my favorite trade targets in 2026 already, and I'll tell you why. So I don't know how deep you get into schedules right off the rip, but let me read you Denver's starting schedule. So after the preseason, they open against the Chiefs on the road. They get the Jaguars at home. They get the Rams at home. They go to the 49ers. They go to the Chargers. They have the Seahawks at home. They go to the Cardinals, which is a plus matchup, and then they get the Chiefs at home. In the first 7 or 8 weeks, they're favored in one, perhaps two. I'm not sure how that Jaguars or the Chargers game shakes out as far as Vegas is concerned. But in the first 8 weeks, they're favored in one, maybe two of their games. They play a stiff schedule right out the rip. That means that a lot of these Denver players, I'm not looking to draft and play for the first half of the season. I am looking to snatch them from managers in the middle of the season that are just sick of them. Because after this stretch, they get the Panthers, they get the Raiders, they get the Steelers, they get the Dolphins, they get the Jets, they get the Raiders. The next six games, plus, 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 plus. Really, really interesting schedule to consider. I want to have all of our discussions going forward through all these players through this lens. So, James, I yapped for a little bit. I want to hear what you're thinking about Bo Nix, because I'm excited about Bo Nix. As long as he can prove his ankle is healthy, he's kind of like Patrick Mahomes light to me. I think he's quite undervalued if he is healthy to begin the season. So talk to me about the young guy.
So I'm more of a believer than I'm not. I definitely wasn't when he got drafted, but I'm mostly a believer because I feel like the Broncos last year were the best team in the AFC, and Bo Nix was able to kind of put the team on his back at times when they needed him. He was still very clearly playing like a young player in the NFL, but he wasn't a young player when he came out of the draft. He was like a 17th year senior or something like that. Bo Nix has been around longer than his resume says, and he is a very talented quarterback. I think he's going to be healthy enough to produce for this team. If not immediately, his QB14 price tag that he's going at right now is the same price as you would have to pay to get Travis Kelce right now in the 12th round. That's an easy backup quarterback. He's not going to be as sexy as somebody like, I mean, most other people. He's not going to be as sexy as Patrick Mahomes as a late round quarterback, but his ceiling is very high. The things about the Broncos that frustrate me are trying to figure out who in the running back department and wide receiver department are going to be the guys to look for. I have no doubt that Bo Nix will be a top 12, you know, I'll say top 8 quarterback in the NFL for fantasy football this season. QB14 is way too low. But what he does it with most consistently is going to concern me. So let's start with the running backs. RJ Harvey and J.K. Dobbins are the guys we need to look at here. And if you watched a lot of these guys over last season, you will have noticed pretty quickly how the dynamic behaved. So J.K. Dobbins was kind of the every down back, whereas RJ Harvey was almost exclusively used in passing downs. Later in the season, when J.K. Dobbins would get banged up, R.J. Harvey got more opportunities and did produce with them relatively well. But is how many of those opportunities he actually got and how consistent he was in being able to make good on them. So for both of those guys, J.K. Dobbins and R.J. Harvey, it kind of seems like J.K. Dobbins is the kind of the guy who is going to be more productive on average, but R.J. Harvey is more of your big shot guy who probably is worth more in best ball than he is in real fantasy football. But still, our consensus rankers have R.J. Harvey as the RB31 and J.K. Dobbins as the RB35. You could definitely say that Harvey is the younger back. He's got more tread on the tires. Dobbins has been around for a while. He's got some clear injury history. This could be a great opportunity for RJ Harvey to take control of the backfield and never give it up again. That could totally happen. But we've seen more out of J.K. Dobbins recently than we have out of RJ Harvey. And I kind of want nothing to do with either. I've been taking smatterings of both in the 7th, 8th, 9th round, depending on where they get. But I am not super thrilled to get either, although I acknowledge that there's a pretty solid ceiling play for both of these guys. Stu, what do you think?
Yeah, the running backs. I'm in on one, out on the other. I am pretty into J.K. Dobbins at his current, you know, price, because like you said, I think he gets the primary go. I think he gets the first crack at things, and when he's healthy, he does produce very, very well. A lot of RJ Harvey's season statistics last year came in a stretch of a couple games where he had a really, really high touchdown percentage, something that's unsustainable in my opinion. I was really, really happy to be the beneficiary of those touchdowns, but I think it's still J.K. Dobbins as the first go, the first and second down sort of back, R.J. Harvey out of the backfield, you know, catching passes. And then we also have to factor in their new draft pick in the fourth round. This is Jonah Coleman out of Washington. So he adds another little layer of intrigue to this running back stable for Denver. I'm not super into drafting really any of them. J.K. Dobbins over any of the others, but that's mostly just as a volume play or a desperation, like, flex style sort of RB3 kind of target there. So nothing too incredible, but again, see how the beginning part of the season goes. Let somebody else draft them, and then maybe you can pick them up for cheap as the season goes on. You can kind of assess if J.K. Dobbins is healthy, because he does like to get hurt throughout his career. Not that he's not a talented player, but he needs to be on the field for us to get production. And then we talk about the wide receivers and the new guy in town, Jalen Waddle, coming over in a trade from Miami. He had an extremely disappointing season last year. There's a lot to like, I think, about this move, because I don't think that the Denver Broncos, as an ascending team, is going to, you know, pay that price for Jalen Waddle, bring him over, and then not give him, you know, the first looks. Right now, he's going in standard as, I think it was, oh gosh, I just looked at it, Michael. Come on, pull it back up. Oh, Lord. The wide receiver 23. I actually do think he's undervalued at that spot. I think wide receiver 16 to 18 is right where he's going to land by season's end, as long as he can stay healthy, because he is almost a lock to miss a game or two across the season. And in addition, for the games that he does play, you will see him go to the sidelines multiple times. You're going to see a lot of threads, you know, prop up online. Jalen Waddle, you know, missing plays for an ankle injury or a hamstring thing, and then he's going to come back in. It's just the Jalen Waddle experience. But he is one that I'm not drafting, as even with this schedule lens that I'm looking through. I like Jalen Waddle. I like him in this squad. He's got a good average to good quarterback in Bo Nix to throw to him, and I think this team is going to win a lot more games. So, yeah, love Jalen Waddle. Cortland Sutton is one that I just can't convince myself to draft. He's come out and said, you know, even if I get less looks, I just want to win. I want to help the team. Very admirable, but my fantasy team doesn't win when Cortland Sutton gets less looks and he's starting for me. So I'm tepid, extremely tepid on him based on a lot of the reasons I've already mentioned. Not super, super interested, James. And then the tertiary option, like Troy Franklin, Pat Bryant, not super draftable at this point. Can you speak to the pass catchers for me?
Sure can. I agree with you that Jalen Waddle is undervalued, but how undervalued, I'm not sure. I am a fan of Jalen Waddle as a player. I think that the last couple years in Miami definitely kind of made us forget about how wildly talented he is and versatile as a player that he is. Both in the injuries he sustained, as well as in the meteoric fall of Tua Tagovailoa over there, as well as that whole regime of that era. But Jalen Waddle, I love him as a player. This should be a slam dunk in his new home here, but something is giving me pause, and I'm kind of the same way you were an anti Rashee Rice vibes. I'm not anti Jalen Waddle on vibes, but something just feels wrong. And I am almost positive that it's just watching him play for the Dolphins the last few years that has sullied his reputation and my opinions of him. But just looking at his numbers, last year, he played in 16 games. Had 910 yards on the season. His first three seasons in the league, he was over 1,000 yards in all three, topping out at 1,356 with 8 touchdowns in 2022. But in 2024 and 2025, those were his two less desirable years. In 2024, he only averaged 10 points a game. Last year, he averaged 12.1, which was a step up, but not really enough to be super excited about. I would love to see Jalen Waddle step into this receivers room and take control. He's got Cortland Sutton there, who is a veteran. Waddle is a veteran in and of himself. He's going into year six here. Year six. He should be able to connect with Bo Nix to produce very well. Cortland Sutton is talented in his own right. I think you could probably say that towards the end of the season last year, he started to miss steps. I don't think he's that old to the point where you really need to be that worried about him. He was the wide receiver 13 last year. He is on a streak of a couple straight 1,000-yard seasons. But as a Cortland Sutton owner, I felt some of his lulls over the course of the season. But overall, still producing extremely well. I don't think Cortland Sutton is going to go away just immediately. Like, yeah, he's going to get fewer shots because Jalen Waddle is there. But that doesn't make him not a great target. So I see this as of being a more evenly balanced receiving share than I think people tend to think. So maybe I just flipped myself. Maybe Jalen Waddle is being overvalued.
Talked yourself into it.
Yeah. Either way, I'm not sure I'm targeting either of these guys. And it's the same reasons why I'm not sure I'm targeting the running backs. But the whole share thing operates differently for wide receivers than it does for running backs, and we've seen on occasion, it doesn't happen often, but it does happen that two wide receivers on one team can still be wide receiver ones. But we saw it happen last year.
Yeah, it's an exciting team. A lot of these guys should be very fantasy relevant. It's just there's a lot of ambiguity going around. And then there's Evan Ingram, and I'm not ambiguous about this one. You shouldn't draft Evan Ingram. I completely forgot that he existed as I was doing my prep for this. I pulled it up and I was like, wow. Good for him.
Yeah, good for him getting on a are the Broncos a Super Bowl caliber team? They're a team that has the caliber that they can make it to the Super Bowl, but
I don't see them winning the Super Bowl. I see them making the playoffs again. It's just I don't look at this and I don't think they've got it.
And then you look at the other side of the ball and they're incredible on defense.
Yeah, that's true. I will say this, a lot of these players and that we talked about today and next week, we have to think about the fact that they play all these defenses twice. I mean, every team plays Denver twice, every team plays Kansas City twice, every team plays the Chargers twice. Those are all good to great defenses. So you have to kind of keep that in mind when you're looking at any of these players.
They also get to play the Raiders twice.
Yeah, but that doesn't completely offset everything.
Nah. But I do think that is the end of our relevant players on both of these teams. I guess the Broncos, as I said, they're going to be a highly sought-after defense. But, Stu, closing thoughts, my friend.
Well, I know we're running like kind of very long, but we do have one more Ethan question to round out questions. Okay. Question number 3 from good old Ethan. How much stock do you put into predicting your league's keepers if you keep keepers? You know, there's a variety of ways you could do keepers. Ours personally is, you know, you have your first round pick. You can keep one player from your team, but they're the first round pick. Other leagues will do it in a variety of different, positions, maybe where you drafted them plus one sort of thing. You can do keepers. And he says also, I feel that my first few mocks get put off purely because I don't want to set their keepers, or I assume to estimate what they're going to use as their keepers. So, James, any initial thoughts on this, on how much stock you put into predicting keepers?
How much stock do I put into predicting keepers? A ton.
All of it.
All of it, yeah. Especially when it's confined to the first round. It is going to completely determine how the first round shakes out as far as positions specifically. And that is the first building block to creating your team's composition, which it basically determines your strategy for you. So you have to have a good idea who is going to keep who. And I would say that usually it's, if not obvious, you've got a pretty good inkling. In some other leagues I'm in, I've got like one where each team gets 3 keepers and, they get them in the round that you took them the year before, or rather 1 year, round earlier. And then it's tougher to predict, but even then it's usually pretty simple just looking at it based on value. But if you are in a keeper league, you really need to make an effort to just take a guess at who is going to be kept. And if it's a one keeper only taken in the first round, it's probably almost always going to be less than half of the league that takes that keeper, unless they're forced to take a keeper, which is a fine rule as well. But yeah, a lot of stock.
Hunt all the stock.
Do it.
Mean, you are doing yourself a disservice if you aren't trying to predict what your league mates are doing. Hopefully you know enough about them to know what they're doing. Like you say, if it's like ours where, you know, the first round is the only keeper, that's not super difficult to predict, so I'm constantly doing it. But for those leagues where, you know, I used my 11th round pick to get, you know, Matt Stafford because that's where I took him, that's very difficult, and I don't think you have to get that deep into the weeds. It's going to be a league by league, case by case basis, but if you're not at least trying to do that, then you're doing yourself a disservice, and you're not, you know, in my opinion, drafting, you know, with the season in mind. So not anything too crazy about that. Just get down in there, do the details, don't get too deep in the weeds, like I said, but try to, you know, practice like you play. Kind of deal. Anyway, closing thoughts, unless you have anything else. We are on Instagram and on X at Fantasy Football on both platforms if you want to interact with us there. And like I mentioned earlier, we do take questions and beer recommendations at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. And thank you guys for listening. I always like these episodes where we talk about fun teams because we always go another extra 20 minutes. Next week will be Chargers Raiders, and I am always one of the biggest Charger homers every single year, I swear. So come back next week and listen to us chat about the Chargers, talk to us about the Chiefs, talk to us about the Broncos. Cool stuff. Interact with us. We want to hear from you. And why don't you take us home for the evening, James?
Absolutely. As far as run times go, we are in mid-season form right now, Dr. Stu. We're pushing up on an hour here, but it was a good 52 minutes. We got a lot of talking talked that needed to be talked about, and we're going to have a lot more talking to do about fantasy football here in the coming weeks. The summer is, it's not waning, but the off season is looking wane-ish. Not a lot more of these divisional breakdowns left to go. It's ticking down. Hopefully you're mock drafting. Hopefully you are starting to think about your season, starting to take your prep a little bit more seriously, because the ADPs you're starting to see now are maybe not completely based on legit live drafts, but they're getting sprinkled in. Stu and I are still in a draft right now. Actually, I'm on the clock right now. But, fantasy football is coming, baby. When it gets here, it's going to be great. And when it gets here, Stu and I will continue to give you the stuff that you need to know. So for all of us here at Fantasy Football, for Dr. Michael Stewart, for Pixel the Cat, Ninja the Dog, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.